refers to Adrian. I never called Adrian anything other than A. And she told me once that she really liked it when I called her A, so it stuck. When we visited A and Jean in Vermont, I must be late because I just lost my train of thought. That's great. They come to Boston, and we'd meet for lunch. And I, more than one occasion, I'd be sitting down, and I'd be talking with A, and the food would come up, and I'd be engrossed in conversation, and Jean, without saying anything, would get up, get the food, serve it to me, and I'd look at him like, are you nuts? You're Gene Colan. You're not supposed to serve me the food. I'm supposed to serve you the food. And then we'd fight for the check, but I was pretty wily on that. I tried to pay for it beforehand and make a deal with it. After all, Boston was, you know, was my neck of the woods. But, Gene would do it all the time. He'd go and he'd get the stuff, and I'd say, Gene, no, this is my job. But that's the type of person he was. I mean, one of the greatest comic book artists, pencilers to ever work in the field, acknowledged with Lifetime Achievement Awards, and there he was getting me stuff. And I kept on telling him, and he was always so modest about it, that it was so great because when I grew up, and I've been very fortunate this way, you know, Gene Colan and many of these other guys were really my idols. Growing up, it was the comic book artist and writer and inker and even letterer.
And nobody is calling. We're not getting one call for somebody to become a member of the station.
Oh, please pick it up.
And there's nobody else who would let anybody go into this amount of depth in about comics. Most comic book radio shows are kind of 15-minute review things or interviews at a convention, and then once they have played them all, that's the end of that. What I did here from when I started on Hour of the Wolf, as a matter of fact, the first time I ever did comic books on the radio was an episode of Hour and the Wolf. It'll be 20 years ago next month.
Wow.
I interviewed Jim Shooter on Jim Freund's show. And
you realize you just mentioned Jim Shooter, former editor of Marvel, on a Gene Colan show.
Yeah, right.
Open a whole can of worms.
Oh, don't open that can of worms.
Well,
we have
another hour and a half to go. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. If you tuned in to listen to Hour of the Wolf, I am Ken Gale, who you've heard on Jim's show. He is at ReaderCon collecting interviews that you'll hear on subsequent episodes of Hour of the Wolf. So he asked me to step in for him. It is a fun drive show, so I am doing what Jim would be doing, which is asking people to call 212-209-2950 and become a member of WBAI. $25 for a regular membership, $99 for a Gary Null premium, $30 for a Ken Gale Ecologic premium. There's all kinds of health DVDs, and ask the volunteers in the back and talk about what you'd like to receive as a present. And, you know, whatever your budget is, we've got all kinds of stuff, including WBAI rolling papers that were offered earlier this evening.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm serious. $25, and you can not only be a member of the station, but you could get a little pack of 10 rolling papers
and you can smoke some BAI.
The pack that come in, it says WBAI on it. And when Mitch was offering it earlier this morning, he says, but WBAI does not condone the smoking of tobacco because that's dangerous and is unhealthy.
Right. So don't make WBAI have to peddle other stuff for the rolling papers to stay afloat.
Thank you for that call. 212-209-2950. I mean, he had a movie on marijuana, and he had all kinds of interesting stuff. But there's most of our premiums seem to be around the health field.
Definitely healthy. there's also the internet. You can donate on the internet at WBAI.org.
Oh,
yes. And I will bet you that a lot of our listeners right now are on the internet listening over it. Because I trolled it for like half an hour beforehand.
Yay, Gina.
So, you know, if you're not in the area and you don't for some reason have free long distance, then you can definitely do it over the internet.
You can go to donate to your favorite show and donate to Hour of the Wolf. And I'm not going to say that enough said will come back if we raise enough money. For one, we're not going to raise enough money at one in the morning. And secondly, the credit will and should go to Jim Freund. He's been at WBAI for about 40 years doing shows. He took over Hour of the Wolf from Margot Adler, who is now at NPR doing shows there. And some people go, is that the same Margot Adler who used to do Wicca shows and WBAI? Says, yeah, it's the same Margot Adler. She's not doing Wicca shows at NPR, she's there. So Jim took over Hour of the Wolf from her. So he's got quite a legacy. And there's several shows, actually, besides Enough Said. Off the Hook started on Hour of the Wolf. The first time they did their show on hacking was on Jim's show.
Hour of the Wolf.
So, Jim has got, wide-ranging interests. And, of course, he's a science fiction fan, and certainly science fiction fans have wide-ranging interests. So it makes sense that he would have a lot of different kinds of shows. So in tribute to Jim, we have Gerald and Jerome are answering the phones back there.
Go, woo-hoo! Gerald.
Go, Jerome.
Go, Jerome.
And 212-209-2950. And talk to them and find out what premiums are. There's not, 2 days worth. There's not a zillion to choose from, but there's quite a few. And I doubt if Jim would be insulted any more than I am if you wanted a premium from somebody else's show, because after all, you are supporting Hour of the Wolf. So 212-209-2950. The tally is at zero because, somebody is answering the phone right now and can't.
Awesome.
Make it go up. But, we should have a call for each of those people back there, right?
Absolutely. All two.
Yes, all two of them. And that means we're never going to raise a lot of money because we can't answer a lot of calls at once. But it's 1:30 in the morning. There's not going to be a lot of calls at once. So we just need two. So one more person. Don't leave it up to, you only need one more person. It could be somebody else. And so now it's going to have to be you.
Put the beer down in the bar.
Or the red
bar. Put out your cigarettes. Pick up your cell phone.
Yeah, and by the way, if you're looking up Gene Colan on the internet, it's GeneColan. Now that you know that, call 212-209-2950, and you can be looking up things as you're there. I'm not sure how much Gerald or Jerome knows about comics. And Jerome knows a bit. We've talked comics back there. Gerald and I mostly talk about sports.
Yeah, it's right. Spelling colon reminds me of another story when Adrian was really, really, Gene's wife, laughing.
Now, hold on a minute. I think there's another call coming in. And if it's, I guess it's not another call. Or maybe there's only one person. Okay, now we have two calls. Okay, now
Yay!
You can tell the story.
Excellent. Yay. Well, Gene's birth name was Eugene Cohen. And they all changed their name to Colon. So Gene Colon always seemed to me like this was an idol of mine growing up, like a dashing Earl Flynn type name. And it never really occurred to me until Adrian A. was sitting there at the table with Gene once and goes, if you're going to change your name from Cohen to Colon, why would you pick on? And then she said ASS to name it, to change it to.
What?
Well, she was thinking as a colon, as in colonoscopy.
Oh. So, well.
You could pick whatever name you wanted. And up until that point.
But that's with an O.
It doesn't matter, just phonetically. And the name was colonoscopy. But, but the point is that. Up until that point, I had never made the association. And it was Gene Colan's wife in the middle of the night. And by the way, it's perfectly okay to have this conversation because we were all laughing so hard, including Gene. It must have. I mean, it was side splitting. I mean, it was just.
I mean, I can see why you wouldn't think of it because, you know, you first get acquainted with him in print.
Yeah.
You see his name with you know, C-O-L-A-N, so you don't think about a different spelling because you're just sort of reading the name.
Right.
And so it kind of makes sense that you'd make that mistake or not make that mistake.
Well, it will always be something. I mean, Gene Colan will always be this dashing, especially now that I knew him. I mean, I was very fortunate enough. Like I said, I've been very fortunate to have, you know, looked at this guy as an idol, then, you know, meeting him later on and then becoming, you know, befriending him, is just kind of a childhood dream. I mean, I never had any interest in meeting Hollywood actors. I dug a lot of jazz musicians. I met some of those too. But for Gene Colan to meet him and have him be such a humanitarian, such a great, just selfless individual, I think that everybody knew him was really blessed. And I will say now I'm keeping things light on purpose, but I have shed more than a few tears over his loss.
Well, of course.
And I think that, like I said, I'm trying to keep it light. Being there when they put him in the ground was you know, really tough.
Gene Colan's art was the first that I ever recognized.
Yeah.
And so I recognized it, I don't know how long since it was first on the air, but I remember watching one of the Iron Man Marvel cartoons that were adapted right from the comics, where they used the artwork and kind of moved it around and, you know, would move an arm. It was very awkward animation. It was sort of like Terry Gilliam type animation.
Right. It was like Terry Gilliam.
But the stories were exactly out of the comics. So they were excellent Stan Lee stories.
Yes.
And, you know, watching the Iron Man cartoon going, hey, I have that comic book. Right. I know this story. You know, a neighbor was going to throw out a bunch of comics, and I was like, ooh, comic books. And so they said, oh, you like them? Here, take them all.
Have them.
And that was the first, that was like the beginning of my comic book collection. And so there was this old Gene Colan Tales of Suspense in there. And then I saw it, the cartoon version.
Right.
And that was the first time I realized that, you know, different artists had styles and you could sort of look at them. And I'd read the letters pages where the letter writers are talking about how they could tell, you know, who inked the comic. And that was above me, you know, when I was, you know, 10 years old.
Sure.
But I sure could understand that now you can recognize art. And I remember admiring one of the first panels I admired that wasn't Gil Kane was Gene Colan. It was a Daredevil where he was going over a fence. And it looked so graceful and so fluid. And I realize now that I think it was an Olympic athlete that he modeled that drawing after. But he captured all the fluidity and motion and grace of an Olympic athlete as in Daredevil going over a fence after whatever, you know, villain I guess he was after.
He was constantly, he had an eye for everything, and he was constantly clipping things out of magazines and building up his morgue. And morgue is the common term for, you know, the old files and files and drawers of artist reference material.
You're totally making me think of an issue of Legion of Superheroes, by the way.
Yeah.
Which one?
Chameleon, this is post-Boot, so Ken will not know, but Mark will. When Imra was Saturn Girl was looking through Chameleon's head, she saw images of all of the Legionnaires and a bunch of other people in there, and they looked dead, and she completely flipped out. It looked like a morgue, and it was basically his shape-shifting reference set. So it may in fact have been a really funny comics artist in joke there.
Absolutely.
Right, a morgue and a morgue, yeah. And I should add that as I sit here in the WBAI studios, staring at me, besides Gina Donahue, is Saturn Girl. She comes and sits down right across, and she puts her hat on there, which lifts up Saturn Girl enough so that I can see her from where I'm sitting. And I don't think I've ever had a comic book character stare at me while I did a show. This maybe was on somebody's shirt. So I just thought I would set that scene a little bit.
Well, at least it's not somebody with X-ray eyes.
Yeah, especially after all the radiation shows. I did one on yesterday, and Gary Null did one today.
But I just want to quickly finish. So when he would come, drive from Manchester to Vermont to Boston, the reason why he's driving was because of his eyes. He required, you know, constant treatment. They had specialists in here trying to keep his eyes afloat so he could still see. Apparently, even, you know, as he sat in the doctor's office, and Adrian said that he did this, you know, as long as she knew him, he'd be looking at the magazines, and he'd pull out a pair of scissors and start clipping stuff out of them in the doctor's office.
Right there in the doctor's office.
Right there in the doctor's office. So anybody at Mass General, over the last couple of years, if you're flipping through and saw advertisements and various things clipped out, magazines that may have been done by Gene Colan. Apparently he just couldn't help himself. There he was, sitting, wasting time. You know, he was just, again, in his own world, cutting him out of the doctor's office magazines.
And that is why, you know, Gene Colan got better and better for all 50 or all 60 some years of his art, because he was always studying.
Always studying.
Looking at, you know, something to use. I interviewed him several times at Big Apple conventions and played some of them on the air back when Nuff Said was a regular show. And there was one where he talked about seeing a movie. This must have been in the 60s, early 70s, because Stan Lee was still writing. And he watches this movie, and there's a 20-minute car chase scene in this movie. And Gene thought this was terrific.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow. Look at it. So the next time Stan had a car chase in one of his stories, Gene went and drew it for 6 pages.
Right.
Stan had meant it to be just a few panels.
Yeah, I think I know what it was, most likely from the movie Bullet with Steve McQueen.
Okay.
He must have seen that movie, you know, over 50 times in his life easily. He owned it. It was one of his favorite movies. And what he really loved was that car chase in the Mustang.
Well, Stan did not love that he loved it.
Yeah, no, he didn't, did he?
I mean, Stan Lee's like, what are you giving me a 6-page car chase for? What am I supposed to do with 6 pages? The way Marvel works is the writer gives the plot.
That's right.
And then the artist draws it, and then the dialogue comes in later to fit the artwork. At DC, they tend to do full script. It was like a movie script where the writer says, you know, page one, panel one, this is what the characters are doing, this is what they're saying. Panel two, this is what they're doing, this is what they're saying.
Right.
And the character gets to interpret the angle and gets to interpret whether the camera is going up or down or whatever. But the dialogue and the art are already specified, where there was very art-oriented at Marvel, and so the artist gets to interpret the plot how they want, and then the writer comes in and puts in the dialogue. So there's Stan with 6 pages of car chase going, you can't do exposition for 6 pages, and there's no dialogue going on because there's 2 people chasing each other in cars. And he was just screaming.
They could totally be sassing each other. I mean, why not put trash talk in there? I mean, it's a car chase. There's going to be trash talk.
Well, see, that's just it.
Do you remember the comic that Gene talked about where he did that for 6 pages? Mark, do you remember it?
I do remember him talking about this.
Well, he talked about it a lot. Because I'm just wondering, because every once in a while, Stan would just simply go, well, no words will do these pages justice, so let's just look at them.
Yeah, but I don't think they printed it, right? I mean, actually, It's kind of sad, though, because the thing that you do when Gene Colan hands in six pages of a card case is you don't dialogue it. You print six pages of a card case.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Stan did that kind of stuff. He would just not dialogue if somebody went on. You know, Jack Kirby has the Fantastic Four going through space for pages and pages, and it's like, you know, there's nobody to talk to. They're just going through space, and it just Jack felt like having them go through space for a while.
Right. Kind of like random dinosaurs showing up in Excalibur. Explain this.
And so Stan would just simply go, well, no words could do this justice. So I just don't know which six-page car chase. But, you know, Gene was, of course, so well-liked and respected that, you know, he wasn't fired for doing that. He was just yelled at, and it's like, well, please don't do that again.
Yeah.
And then all Stan Lee could do is hope that Gene would not do it again.
Because Gene Colan, when he handed in those pages, you know, Gene said that Stan used to tease him all the time because he'd hand him these detailed pencil pages, and Stan would look at it and goes, Where's the figures? Oh, wait, no, I see them now.
Oh, jerk.
Yeah, apparently that was like Stan's ongoing joke whenever Gene Colan handed in pages because they were so thickly penciled, you know, before the inker got them. Apparently all the time that's what Stan would tell him.
Well, before I talk about some of the pranks that he used to pull on Don McGregor, Anyway, you are listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. So everything is live streamed on the internet. So tell your friends about what crazy stuff is going on WBAI. They can listen to it wherever they happen to be. This is normally Hour of the Wolf. Jim Freund has a science fiction show. He usually interviews a writer every week. Sometimes he interviews the writer and has them read from their work. Occasionally he reads from their work, but usually it's the writer reads a little bit and then they talk about the craft of writing, whether it's plotting or dialogue or description, all the different things that go into writing. And he gets very in-depth interviews with different writers, and they talk about other writers as well and whatever subgenre they're writing in. And that's what you get with Jim Freund every week from 1:30 a.m. until 3 in the morning. I call it Wednesday night. It's technically Thursday morning. He is at ReaderCon recording. We don't do tape anymore. Recording in interviews with writers that he will present to you in the coming months. And he asked me to sit in for him. And so that's what I'm doing. But it is a membership drive, so I am definitely going to ask you to become members of WBAI. We're a listener-supported station. The transmitter, the Empire State Building, costs something like $30,000 a month. And we don't have corporate underwriters. We don't have massive, you know, friends that give us $1 million every month. We don't have people leaving us $1 million in their wills.
Dude, you totally should.
And yeah, we should.
What is that? Why don't we? Okay, why aren't there more independently wealthy and utterly generous people in the world?
Yeah, I wonder. Is generosity and wealth are such strangers to each other? Is that what's going on?
I was worried that Gina was going to come up with like a plot to kill Al Gore.
I saw that movie.
we need the funds.
So 212-209-2950. Right now the tally for Hour of the Wolf sits at $50. And yeah, I guess Jim can use an excuse. Well, I wasn't, you know, that it wasn't, you know, me doing it, you know, so blame it on Ken. Well, let's not allow that to happen. Let's at least raise the tally a few hundred dollars. You know, normally Jim gets a few hundred dollars in the middle of the night during a pledge drive, so there's no reason that I shouldn't be able to do it, right? You know, Gene Colan's a pretty popular artist. There must be some people who'd want to donate money in Gene Colan's name or donate in Nuff Said's name or anything like that. 212-209-2950, $25 for regular membership. And if you want, you can get the WBAI rolling papers for that same $25. and Yeah, there's a lot of interesting premium, a lot of different movies, different aspects on healthcare and different conspiracy shows. And there's, I don't know if there's any music stuff oriented in there or not. Golden Age Radio hasn't been on, so I can't say, oh, get one of his premiums. They're always good. But I don't know what they're going to be.
I'm sure they'll be good.
I asked Max what his premiums would be, and he's like, oh, I haven't figured those out yet. he's still making up his mind, and so it's like, okay, well, never mind then.
Can you pledge and like say, can I hold off on specifying my premium until I hear one I like?
Why?
I'm still like thrown off by the rolling papers thing, but I keep on thinking the next premium is going to require batteries.
So oh my gosh!
Never mind. So.
Okay. On the radio, no one can see me blush.
No, but they can certainly imagine it, especially after you said that.
Yeah, no. Oh, come on. I was keeping it very vague. And
yes,
but it seems to me like, you know, as I walked home back when I lived in Manhattan down 2nd Avenue in the windows, you know, it's rolling papers and various other things.
I now kind of wonder what kind of tweets Gina's getting from her fiancé right now. She's staring at a computer screen even as we speak.
No, I can't connect to the Wi-Fi. It's
you can't?
BAI's Wi-Fi also needs a fun drive, I think.
Well, that could be true. 212-209-2950. One of the things I have noticed that people get so wrapped up in the conversation that they don't want to miss anything by calling in. Well, you can have a very fun conversation with Jerome or Gerald, who are answering the phones back there. And second, I have a little bit of music queued up, and this is a song by Styx that mentions Doctor Strange in it. And so I'm going to play that to give you some music to dial with. And so dial 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. And this also gives the three of us a chance to rest our throats a little bit and get something to drink.
Go find some batteries.
Thank you for that call. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. So two volunteers, one call, so be that other call. And, hey, if you want to have fun in the middle of the night, driving crazy by two of you calling in so that somebody has to frantically go, oh, there's somebody else. Hold on. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Hey, that call went away awfully quickly. Was that a crank call? Don't call the volunteers. They're volunteering their time to answer calls, and you're giving them a crank call? My God. You're going to give crank calls? Give it to me so that I can ignore them here in the studio. 212-209-2950. Become a member of the station. $25 for a regular membership. If you heard my environmental show last night, you can get those premiums. Those are only $30 or $50 for the two of them. I'd be very flattered if one person actually wanted to transfer one premium and give the credit to this show. That would be kind of cool.
Very cool.
Jim Freund is just been doing yeoman work here at BAI for a long time, and I think he should get a lot of credit for his show raising a lot of money, even though it's a new time slot. And so some of his audience may not have discovered him yet. 212-209-2950. You can get the Super Strength Formula from Gary Null. It's $99. I have to say it that way.
It doesn't help. Super Strength Formula.
it makes me think of Troll Formula in City
of
Heroes.
Right. Get the Super Strength Formula and rolling papers. What more could you roll the Super Strength Formula in the papers?
With batteries.
Not that I am not recommending this. I'm just saying that some people, what do they say in Fox News? Some people say that
you
can roll
it. Citation needed. Citation needed.
Yeah. Donate in the name of Adam Austin.
See, Gina talks in internet speak. I mean, it's like, you know, we'll be going somewhere and I'll say something she finds funny and will she laugh? No, she says LOL.
No, I actually go lol.
By the way, we should mention that somewhere there, Gene Colan was a big photography nut, as a matter of fact.
Oh, God.
Somewhere out there on Gene Colan's fancy digital camera, which I have spent hours of my life on the phone explaining how to use it.
I spent about an hour helping you at least that one time.
Oh, but you see, what you didn't understand, Gina, is that had gone on for years prior and after. I mean, it wasn't always the camera. I was known for going. Gene Colan would call me up and say, "Mark, I'm having a problem with electronic device XYZ," and I would help him out. I mean, it's just, and I'd be doing it over the phone blind. So I'd have him trying to get, you know, the model numbers. It was everything from remote controls to camera, and
I would
look stuff up. It was just, and then we talked.
I do tech support over the phone. I know your pain.
Yeah, no, it was okay because it was Gene Colan. I mean,
well,
it was kind of fun.
This is true.
But all the time, he'd call all the time. This went on for years. I mean, and it wouldn't always be that. I mean, he'd call. I talk about, you know, selfless, giving man. I won't go into it, but there was a personal financial tragedy that's happened in our household, and Gene also was going through a lot, and we won't go into the tragedies that happened in his life, or maybe we'll touch on it, but I'm in trying to keep things, like I said, light. He would always call up, and I'd have to ask him about it. He'd be calling up to ask how I was doing, how my wife was doing, how the kids were doing. He would do it all the time, and total disregard to his health problems, total disregard to his financial problems, total disregard to all the things that went on in his life that caused him pain. That's the type of person he was.
So there's this time that you and Gina are helping Gene Colan fix his camera.
Yes.
And so you're testing it out.
Yes.
And how are you testing it out, Mark?
I believe I was taking pictures of Gina. But I wasn't the only one. Gene Colan took a bunch of pictures of Gina, too.
Yes.
on a 8-gig flash drive, there's some 25 odd pictures of Gina out there.
And then I went, oh my gosh, you guys, I don't even let my mom take this many pictures of me.
That's exactly right.
And then as we left,
I think we were taking pictures of Gina walking out the door. No.
And as we left, Gene Colan turns to Gina and says, "You have a wonderful smile. The camera must love you."
Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. That was good. And it's.
And so every time Gina complains about getting her picture taken, I go, "Gene Colan says the camera loves you." And how can you argue with Gene Colan? I mean, you couldn't argue with him once he was alive. He was so adorable, and he's, you know, a living legend. Oh. So now he's gone, and you can't argue with him. So, you know, that's it.
And now my glasses are smudged because I put my hands over my face while I was wearing them.
Yeah, so nobody on the radio could see her smile. And so, of course, now her fiancé is listening to this. And so now anytime he takes her picture and she complains, he's like, "But Gene Colan says the camera loves you."
Thanks,
right,
guys.
Right.
And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. This is Hour of the Wolf. I am Ken Gale, substituting for Jim Freund just this week. And with me is Mark Svensson, a good friend of legendary, recently deceased artist Gene Colan, who drew like everything for Marvel. He pretty much drew every one of their characters and an awful lot of the DC characters. He worked for independent comics. He did a lot of different things, and he did them all beautifully. He never got worse. Some artists, you know, when they're in their 60s, 70s, their eyesight's not as good, and somehow they get worse. Gene, even with his eyesight failing, just didn't get worse. He just kept studying and learning. And so we've been talking about him. And my other guest is Gina Donahue, the blushing almost bride.
10 months.
with the flight ring engagement.
Yes. Yes.
Yes, actually, right. You should tell that story.
No.
But first...
Half the internet is listening.
All the more reason why we should tell that story.
Oh, my God.
212-209-2950, because only listener supports can keep this going. And I think it would be great if Hour of the Wolf was on for every week of the drive. she's showing me the text that her fiance is giving her all during the show, so you should read some of them when they're appropriate. 212-209-2950. If Hour of the Wolf raises enough money, then he won't be preempted for the 47th re-airing of some show. There are certain shows, they make money, so they get aired all the time, which means there's a good chance that you have already heard it. But if it makes money, that's why they're going to put it on during this drive. It only makes sense. So if the shows you like a lot, the science fiction shows, if they've got to raise some money so that they don't get preempted and so Jim can do his own thing next week and the week after. So call 212-209-2950. Support WBAI, support Hour of the Wolf, support Jim Freund's programming that he's been doing for years. Give him some encouragement. And this way he'll think, well, the show was in good hands when Ken was there. Right now he's not going to think that, and neither is Tony Bates.
Ooh.
Since we've only raised $50 in
the
first hour.
Give me a hand here.
And as the time goes on, there's less and less people listening as the night gets on. So
we need another $100 more to explain on the air about the flight ring.
Oh my God.
That's right.
I feel so used.
Make no bones about it. I'm pimping Gina.
Oh my God.
Okay. You can take the text from your fiance that Mark is pimping Gina. Okay.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but he's liable to be in support of you because...
No,
he's... I don't get anything out of it. It's for BAI, remember?
Yes, 212-209-2950. Become a member of WBAI. $25 for a regular membership. And that includes rolling papers if you want them.
Yes. Batteries not included.
And actually, the Health Effects of Marijuana movie they were playing in the 9 o'clock show was actually very interesting.
What's the connection to rolling papers?
Well, I think it's just the rolling papers is only $25, and the movie was $100. So
ooh,
you know, they got to raise more money if they had a movie
there you go.
That they were pitching. So I think that's the connection.
I have a quick Gene Colan question for you.
Well, I'm going to play some music to help people dial, and
okay.
So that you can get a drink of water, and so can we. And
I'm drinking straight coffee, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm drinking Red Bull.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, I could actually drink water, so I don't know. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950, and here's some sticks.
Pitching on the wall, waiting for the bus to
Well, somebody did indeed call during that song, but only one person that I noticed, although I did go off to get drink some tea.
Because it was Styx. Sorry, Ken.
I just like to say one thing, though. After listening to your rockin' Nuff Said beginning that I know and love, I want to say this so everybody understands. You cannot slam dance to Styx.
No, you can't.
You cannot. You can't even do a Mr. Roboto. It just doesn't work. All right. Well, at least I didn't have to, like, set the chairs back up or clean up the kitchen after it. But, all right. Just being very clear about that.
And
can I ask my question, my Gene Colan question, to you?
Yeah.
Okay. If you got those particular Marvel issues, did you first know Gene Colan as Adam Austin?
I don't know, because when I was very young, I kind of looked at the credits, but I didn't absorb them the way I do now.
Okay.
So yeah. I may very well have known, but, you know, to me, it was sort of, you know, getting comics that were several years older than you know, that were a few years old. It was like, wow, you know. That,
right.
Yeah, because you kind of think of when the comic is no longer on the newsstand, you'll never see it again. And I was learning, this is the first time I ever read the Doom Patrol, you know, and it's like, wow, who are these people?
If you only knew then what you know now.
Indeed. And, you know, if all I knew that I was going to, you know and befriend some of those people I was reading.
Right.
Yeah, I had no conception of any of this stuff when I was a kid. Right. If I went back in time and talked to, you know, the 10-year-old Ken Gale and said, you know, what I would be like, you know, in years later, you know, I wouldn't believe any of it. I tell you, you're clearly not me in the future.
Now, to be fair, okay, well, first thing we should explain that Adam Austin was a pen name for Gene Colan. It's the first thing when he first worked at Marvel to disguise the fact that he was working for both companies. So that's the first thing. So we're not confusing people that are listeners. The second thing is that in Rutland, Vermont, there was a very famous person who was a Batman fan, who, I'm talking about, Ken?
Tom Fagan.
Tom Fagan, yes. When I met Tom Fagan, and we talked about you, because you went to Rutland, Vermont, he told me in no uncertain words that when he asked you, when you were younger, what you wanted to do with your life, on the convention floor, on the comic book convention floor, you said, I want to do this. And Tom Fagan said, what? He says, I want to do this. I want to go to conventions. This is what I want to do with my life.
Best job ever. Oh, my God.
So Tom Fagan, all those years later, when I, you know, was talking to him in his 80s, and this is, you know, probably 2,000 years later, he was saying, you pretty much had lived out that dream. And all these years later, you're still going to conventions, and you're still a staple figure at all of the good ones. So, you know,
I don't remember ever saying that. But
well, okay,
I'm not going to call Tom Fagan a liar. That's for sure.
Yeah. So there is a little bit, I don't know, manifest destiny, whatever you want to. I don't know.
I mean, I'm certainly doing convention panels on the radio when I can.
Yeah.
That's so, kind of what this is.
So
Minicon.
There was a young Ken Gale who had a goal and reached out and grabbed it.
That's a bizarre one.
That's one of these days. I feel like Tom's long gone right now, but I really have never been to Rutland during Halloween. I hear the parade still goes on. He had a comic book themed Halloween parade that he'd organized. And apparently it's still running to this day.
And that parade made it into the comics.
Yes, it
did. In the early to mid-70s, there'd be Halloween specials taking place in Rutland, Vermont.
Right, drawn by Neil Adams.
And the first DC Marvel crossover was actually one of those stories.
Tom Fagan was both a Marvel comic book character and a DC comic book character. He appeared in both Marvel comics and DC Comics in their stories.
And I guess we should welcome new WBAI member Patrick Sharp.
Yes!
And that's his fiance laughing in the background there.
Sorry!
He accused me of subconsciously guilt-tripping him.
Wait, I just want to mention at this point that pimping Gina works.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you.
Oh, man.
And Mark's son, who just hit for the cycle in his baseball game, is named Patrick also. So it's just
That's the right name.
No,
it was Scott that hit for
Scott hit for Patrick. Oh,
for the cycle. Yeah.
Oh, Patrick is the one who got the no-hit innings.
That's right.
He pitched some no-hit innings,
no-hit innings. Yeah, 7 Ks. They actually wound up sharing the game ball. We have a game ball that has both Patrick and Scott's name in it. It was a proud Father Day.
It certainly is. It'll be a proud Father Day for a long time.
It is. And it was on my wife's birthday, Lisa's birthday, July 11th.
Well, and I did promise that I would tell the story of the pranks that Gene Colan played on Don McGregor.
Yes.
Don was Gene's writer on a lot of different comics. And what Gene would do is would call him up like at midnight, 1 a.m, and say that he drew the story, but I can't draw page 10. And Don's like, why can't you draw page 10? He says, well, you hurt this little kid. I can't draw a little kid being hurt. It says, but that's the whole motivation for the entire rest of the story. How can you not have that story in this? You know, it says, no, I can't draw it. I just can't draw it. You heard a little kid. I can't draw something like that. So you have to find another way of telling the story. But that's the motivation for the character. That's why he goes after the bad guy. He's like, no, you have to do something else. He says, well, why are you telling me at 1 in the morning when the deadline is tomorrow?
Oh, man.
And of course, page 10 was indeed drawn, and the entire story was turned in the next day, complete. And next story would come along, and Gene would call him up at midnight or 1 in the morning, say, I can't draw this. I can't draw this story. I can't do it. You did this. You know, I can't draw a story where you're hurting dogs. I'm sorry. You just can't do that. I said, well, of course, he's evil. He killed – no. Yeah, but you can't have him kill a dog. I'm sorry. Nobody's that evil. You can't
right. –
And he would do this to Don all the time.
Oh, yeah.
But, and Don would believe it every single time.
Oh, my gosh.
But he would mess with him more. He's like, how about a cat? Why can't it be a cat?
Oh, yeah. Those are the pranks. Yeah. Oh, by the way, Mark, Patrick says not welcome.
Oh. I like the guy already. What can I say?
Well, he's got good taste.
Exactly. Well, we know that. He's chosen very wisely. So.
Oh, my God.
You're welcome to blush. It's
and
true.
Actually, we did get to hang out with Patrick a little while when he was in town for Gina's sister's wedding, and he is a great guy. And they both chose well.
Man.
She's blushing. Oh, my goodness. That is a really bright red.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
We better switch back to the...
Yeah, when we have to color code the wires, we
can
use that.
Can you talk about Gene Colan, please? And not about how much he likes his camera.
Darn, that's exactly what I was about to
tell
you.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, no, it's...
212-209-2950. And we do have listener phone calls. Should we take a chance in trying to see what they have to say at this time of night?
Heck yeah.
The phone number to be on the air is 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. You're on the air.
Hi. You were talking about Gene Colan before. I was wondering if you had any stories about Howard the Duck.
Ah.
Sure.
Go ahead, Mark.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Whenever he got those Steve Gerber scripts, as he was illustrating them, Gene would describe that he would laugh so hard he'd be crying. The drops would fall on his pencils. So he had to be careful about that. He really loved Gerber's script. And he was very specific about, you know, Steve Gerber. He always considered Howard the Duck his character, Steve Gerber's character from his brainchild. You know, and that's really the only one thing that I remember. I mean, I remember talking about Dr. Bong with
Oh man, was that the guy that
What was that?
The Dr. Bong was the best villain in the Howard the Duck strip, I think, like even better than the Kidney Lady.
Yes.
Dr. Bong showed up in an issue of Deadpool later on, and it was versus Kitty Pryde and Wolverine, and it was the most horrifying abomination of funny I've ever seen.
See, I like the Hell Cow, but I think it's partly because...
Bessie!
The Hell Cow was pretty great.
Yeah, the Vampire Cow. And I also know the whole – there's a little backstory to the Hell Cow. It was some 50s issue of some Marvel, you know, horror comic that they reprinted in you know, Where Monsters Dwell or one of those. And Tony Isabella just went nuts over this Vampire Cow. And he just couldn't get over the fact that they actually did a Vampire Cow. And then they had the chutzpah to reprint it.
What do you do?
And so, you know, because Tony was always laughing about this vampire cow, Steve Gerber had to put it into Howard the Duck.
You know, on a side note, Howard's the female lead,
Beverly.
Yes, was facially based off of a young Adrian Colan. The facial features, I believe, were A's. I mean, that's neither here nor there.
Well, yes, it is.
It's the things that come out in conversation.
It makes total sense.
Yeah, the body type. Every now and then, A was a reference. Now, Gene Colan constantly, and Eric, his son Eric.
Who's an excellent artist in his own right.
Yes, absolutely. And a really nice, genuine person. He's inherited his father's sweetness. He really is just a great guy. Eric uncovered some of these Polaroids. One of the things that Gene would do, and in the New York Times a bit section where they did that half-page article on him, that was one of them. He would have picked people with the Polaroids take pictures of him with a gun, with a pose, with a leap, with a flashlight, and have the kids do it too, and he'd use those as references. So he was constantly taking pictures of himself or the television screen, again, like cutting out of the magazines, he was always looking for reference material.
Sure.
And apparently that Polaroid was very active. And now some of them have been released. Eric had given one to the paper, so the reason why Gene's in an action shot is he wasn't interested in taking a picture of Gene Colan. Gene Colan was interested in taking a picture for reference. And he had actually, he had a collection of guns. He had a collection of airplane models. He was crazy about all of those, original monster movies. He once said, and you know who was this? I met the kid of, and I said Bela Lugosi, and he goes, no, even better, it was the kid of. Who was it?
I don't know.
Yeah, it was Boris Karloff, right. It was Boris Karloff's kid. He was just crazy about that stuff. He would listen while he was, drawing to on his boards things that, I listen to a lot of weird stuff, but he loved, the Universal Studios and the various other Paramounts. He would listen to their canned sounds. He had an inventory of, doors opening, trains going by, things that the studios used on a regular basis when they put together the audio tracks on their movies. So he would recognize, when he watched movies, he would recognize the sounds and how they were put together. That's what, how much of a film nut he was. He would listen to old radio, he would listen to, classical music, but I was always kind of this his love of movies. I mean, towards the last part of his life, and I still get a little freaked out and teary-eyed when I think of when Gene was finally laid to rest and put in the ground. It was exactly a year after Adrian Colan was to the day. And
it was? I thought it was 13 months.
No.
Oh.
Apparently, wow. It was a year ago. Well, I mean, if I'm to believe the rabbi. I'm trying to keep it light. It's going to get me if I talk about it.
Well, let's take another listener phone call.
212-209
and 2900. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I love this discussion of comics. Let me ask a couple of serious questions. Ken, were you ever a fan, because obviously you're a fan of the good stuff, were you ever a fan of the classic cliffhanger serials of the 30s, 40s, and early 50s?
No.
You weren't.
I was.
Oh, you were.
Well, I still am. They came out in videotape as they were coming out, and Gene Colan was. He loved those.
Well, you know, somebody must love me at Turner Classics, because they're now sort of beginning to do some things. Actually, they were running Buck Rogers for earlier, about a month ago. Now they're running Ace Drummond, which is a Universal serial from the 30s. It's I hope it's a harbinger of good things to come.
This past Saturday, there was an empty space in the slot, and R. Paul Martin and Max Schmid and myself were talking about movie serials, and to a lesser extent, Pickles in the North. And, you know, that was one of the main topics of conversation was movie serials. And, of course, I was completely out of my depth. Cindy just handed me two panels from the Vampire Cow.
Yes!
Well, I have to say, being an aficionado, because I, for 10 years, when the late Chris Steinbrenner was alive and was running the New York Cooperative Film Society, Saturday night after Saturday night, he would show them complete. We didn't have to wait week after week after week like the suckers did back in the 30s and 40s.
Yeah, right.
And so we got to see the 12 and 13 and 15 chapter, you know, the good stuff, the Drums of Fu Manchu, Daredevils of the Red Circle. Very interesting, by the way.
Yeah, that, I mean, it was amazing. I don't even know how the conversation started, but it was mostly Paul and Max and Pickles talking about serials and me saying I did not like the way they – 1 week would end one way, and then the next week would begin before the last one ended and totally change the ending of the first week. It's like, hey, they lied.
A wizard did it.
Well, part of the charm.
Well, yes, part of the charm. But, you know, when I first saw them a whole bunch in a row at a Phil Sewing convention.
Sure.
And so I'm watching them, you know, coming from all the other movies I'd seen, and I was like, hey.
But I want to get back to superheroes. I notice that the release date for the Avengers is March of next year, and May of next year, because I think in March John Carter of Mars is coming out.
Is it March? Because I haven't been able to confirm a date yet.
Yeah, according to a friend of mine, March is John Carter and May is the Avengers.
With Mike Kaluuya designs and John Carter.
Mike Kaluuya designs and oh my gosh, James Purevoy. Sorry.
I'm curious about something. Do you know, Ken, whether or not with all the movies on the Avengers, because, well, this is window dressing for next year, I mean, Captain America, Thor, Green Lantern, are they planning to do, by any chance, a parallel Justice League movie?
I've heard rumors about it, but I'm not sure if the rumors I've heard are like the wishful thinking type rumors.
Probably.
Or ought to be rumors, or probably rumors,
because especially considering the fact that every single time they come out with a new superhero movie for DC, except for the Batman movies, the newest Batman movies, the newest series, that reboot seems to be sticking. the rest of them keep getting retconned because everybody's like, no, that was terrible, or it's wrong, it doesn't fit with anything else.
Uh-huh. Retroactive continuity, by the way.
Yes.
Well, you know, the other thing, Ken, that disappointed me, why did Boomerang, I guess it was Boomerang, why did they discontinue the Justice League? I thought that was one of the best animated series. Justice League and Justice League
Cartoon Network.
I just watched Justice League on cable TV like a few days ago.
You did?
Yes. Our next door neighbor is
no. It's reruns.
It's reruns. But I mean, must still be showing them.
If you
mean why don't they make new ones?
Yes, and I'm just.
Oh, that I can answer. Yeah. The way they market and distribute cartoons, they feel that they're not going to make any more money repeating a whole lot of different ones than they will repeat in just a few. So why spend the money to make more cartoons? They look upon cartoons as something you make a bunch of and you just repeat them over and over and over again. And it's not worth the money to make a lot because little kids are just going to watch them. Even if they've seen them 100 times, they're not going to care. They're not thinking of cartoons as something that people our age watch.
Well,
except for a few exceptions, you know, South Park and Simpsons.
Well, to be fair, they seem to be. If you look at the pattern, and I've obviously wasted way too many brain cells on this, but if you look at the pattern that has happened since, you know, you originally had the Batman, the Bruce Timm,
sure.
Batman the animated series,
Paul Dini and Bruce Timm,
the Timverse,
and they with the Teen Titans and then the
not
Legion.
The same universe, not the same universe.
And, yeah, no, not. But it's true. But they seem to be doing it. And then the most recent one was the Batman Brave and the Bold. They seem to be cycling through where you have a replacement DC cartoon
right.
on a theme that runs X period of time and then is given over to a new one.
I love Batman the Brave and the Bold.
Oh, me too. It's,
and I loved, and I don't know what they've done with this, Young Justice.
Right?
I loved Young Justice.
Yeah, I didn't watch the Young Justice. I did watch, you know, several of the, because I was interested. And again, if you look at it, like, for example, the Batman Brave and the Bold has a very strong Dick Sprang influence, whereas the Teen Titans that preceded it, and even the bridge in between with the Legion, were much more manga influenced.
Which Teen Titans are you talking about? The newer Teen Titans with Beast Boy and that bunch, or the earlier Teen Titans that was, I think it was in the 60s?
Which Teen Titans of the new Teen Titans? Because there are too many to count.
Yes, I'm talking about the modern era within the last 10, 15 years.
Okay.
Okay, so basically
what used to be
Young Justice and then got joined by some members of the Teen Titans after the success of the Teen Titans cartoon.
Mm.
And I would imagine Mark Evanier probably has an article explaining that whole thing about why they only make so many. And if he doesn't, ask him to write that article, and he will.
Isn't there also a producer at Cartoon Network that was interested in changing the entire vision of the DC cartoons? Because for a while, it was like for at least 10 years. When did Batman the Animated Series start? Batman the Animated Series.
The really good one.
Yeah.
Was that like 1991, 92?
Yeah, 91, 92.
Yeah, that's
okay.
About right.
And it, by the way, it has a very similar theme song to the live-action Flash TV series. It's the same composer.
I noticed, by the way, that apparently Cartoon Network is taking advantage of the GL thing, because apparently they're starting a GL series this summer.
Well, that figures. By the way, caller, I would like you to tell the other listeners why they should become members of BAI.
Oh, I can tell you why, because this is a great show, and you sitting in for Jim. He's the only one that, and he knows me because we're friends, he's the only one that not only does great science fiction and fantasy and has live reading on the air and takes phone calls to writers, but he also plays great music. He happens to be a lover of traditional Celtic rock.
Rock on.
Yeah.
He's a Steel Ice Band buff, and he plays child ballads. And no other station does that. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the reason that WBAI should be supported. And the fact that we have you on the air talking, I don't think there's any other radio show in the lower 48 right now that's doing what you're doing. And I love it. As a fan of comics and superheroes and Republic serials and
Celtic rock.
And Celtic rock. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. So, you know, you guys are doing a, you know, fantastic thing. Yeah. And, you know, we lovers of the unusual, what can I say, and the outre,
I don't know about that one.
outre. It's a French word.
So what number should they call?
What?
What number should they call?
212-209-2950.
Yes.
So, you know, whatever. So, Ken, let me ask you something. You've been a lover of comics for, what, 40 years, did you say?
Probably.
Longer than that.
It's hard to say. You know, it's funny because I know I started a little later than most people, but it's been a long time.
By the way, what is the Doom Patrol, please?
Oh, sure. Can I answer
that? Go ahead, Mark.
What is the Doom Patrol, Mark?
One of my favorite comics.
What is the Doom Patrol?
Which version?
No, I'm starting.
We're talking about the Arnold Drake version.
Absolutely, you have to start at the absolute original. There is a comic for DC called My Greatest Adventure, and it was, along with the other DC titles, it was a, you know, mush posh science fiction type fantasy stories. Well, Arnold Drake came up with this concept, and then he was helped out by a fellow writer named Bob Haney. And they wound up getting this wonderful artist, Bruno Premiani, to draw it. And it was the first characters. It was Robot Man, Elastigirl, and Negative Man. And they had this guy in a wheelchair named Chief that were outcast heroes. And they were really the prototypes, and they predated the X-Men. And they really were the genesis of where the X-Men sprang from, because there was a lot of cross...
pollination?
Yes. And Marvel at that time was watching. DC was the number one. They were trying to catch them.
So what universe were they in, Marvel or DC or both?
DC. They're DC characters.
And
what's interesting, though, is that Arnold Drake's concept of the Doom Patrol was he was looking at the DC books, and he thought that the Marvel books, he was looking at the Fantastic Four, were really more in tune of what the young readers wanted. So he was creating these odd characters in really kind of his own little universe compared to what was going on in the rest of the DC universe at the time.
He was basically like, whatever, I do what I want?
Well, his editor, Murray Boltonoff, was really kind of hands-off
awesome.
On him. And it really was, you know, modeled loosely against the Fantastic Four, but instead of being, you know, accepted heroes, they were freaks. They were considered freaks by the public. And it was a great encapsulated story that ends with the death of the Doom Patrol.
They
in
died?
Issue 121,
yeah.
Yes. It became officially the Doom Patrol in issue 86.
It started in issue 80 of My Greatest Adventure,
right.
And then they changed the title.
Right. They changed the title with 86 to the Doom Patrol, and then the characters were all dead, killed off by 121.
Now, Mark, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Who is your favorite villain in both DC and Marvel universes? Now,
that's such a can of worms.
Well, no. I'll tell you why. Because of all the years I've been watching, you know, and listening and enjoying comics and superheroes and supervillains, I sort of have taken, well, let's put it this way. I sort of have taken a love for several. One of my favorite villains, and I feel sorry for him, and I even feel sorry for his daughter. Ra's al Ghul is one of my favorite villains.
Yeah, Ra's al Ghul, sure.
Which, you know what that means in English, the demon's head.
Yeah, of course.
And
that's why his daughter got called Talia Head.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, beloved. And, of course, my other favorite is Darkseid.
Yeah.
Whatever became of Darkseid, whatever became of Apocalypse, whatever became of...
They got overused.
Granny Good. I love Granny.
Granny Goodness.
I love Granny Goodness.
Yeah,
who was,
it's odd.
And who was the guy... Who was the guy that started the Civil War and Apocalypse against Darkseid when he was gone? Or they
Orion?
Played? Not Orion. No. The Wunderbar or Wunder something.
Malice Wunderbar?
Yes.
The Female Furies?
No.
Malice Wunderbar is a she.
Oh,
she is
she?
One of the Female Furies.
Oh, she's one of the Female Furies.
She's the one with Cheshire, the giant demon cat.
Oh, I love it. That stuff I love.
That stuff I know.
The villains.
You're getting all sorts of bonus points with me.
And the Ka-ching! villains, it's just absolutely wonderful. It's interesting, by the way, that, and I'm a sticker for voices, and I love voiceovers. The guy who did the voice for Ra's al Ghul, it turns out, I was watching recently, I never knew that they did an animated series for Men in Black. And he is Alpha. And he, of course, there were certain, just wonderful, you know, again, little crossovers. And I have to say this, by the way. I do have to thank the Hub TV, which used to be Kids Discovery, for bringing back the Anna West series from the 60s. Because you get to see those guys all over again and watch those great actors like Cesar Romero and Eartha Kitt and Roddy McDowall and Vincent Price and all those good people.
You know, Eartha Kitt was in The Emperor's New Groove.
She was?
Yeah, you should watch it.
She was my favorite Catwoman only because of the fact that perfect voice of hers.
Well, I'm going to ask you to give the number for becoming a member of BAI one more time.
Yes, 212-209-2950.
Because you gave some excellent reasons to become a member and why shows like this should be supported.
Well, you make my day and night, my friend.
Oh, and I have to interject two geek things because I can't help myself.
Okay.
You mentioned Men in Black.
Yes.
It was a comic book before a movie.
It was?
Absolutely.
You're kidding.
Absolutely. I would not joke.
Did they have agents J and K and all the rest? Z?
It's different. It's the movie definitely took the ball and ran with it, but it was a comic book, an independent comic book that was sold. The second thing is that have you, well, we'll put in the question first, have you seen the original Green Archer serial?
Yes, I own it.
Good. Yeah, me too. But that is, I have on good authority from Julie Schwartz, and I can say I got it from two different people, that Mort Weisinger, the original editor slash co-creator of that, of Green Arrow, the reason why he put Green Arrow in More Fun Comics.
Because of the Green Archer serial?
Is because he liked the serial. So it was basically when he said, let's do the Green Archer, and hand it over to his writers. So that's how the Green Arrow was created, was off of the Green Archer serial.
And Mort Weisinger was notorious for telling his writers to copy this TV show or that movie.
Right.
He did that all the time, and in fact ended up getting and then Jim Shooter started doing that as well.
Right.
Because he was a protege of Mort Weisinger's and ended up getting sued by Harlan Ellison for having his writers copy one of Ellison's Outer Limits.
Really?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, when Weisinger was an editor, Arnold Drake would talk about how they'd all picked up on how where Mort would get his ideas. And he recycled ideas, by the way, too. And it's interesting. I won't go into this about the Superman mythos as we know it today and how a lot of those stories were taken by, you know, capable writers but had been used before. The plot ideas had been used before, but they were forged into a universe and characters like Mon-El.
Well, there's almost no new stories under the sun, if you believe some people.
Yeah, but, well, anyway, they tried to get a leg up on Mort by watching the television shows that he liked the night before, like Twilight Zone, so they'd know what ideas they're going to get hit with, get a leg up on them the next day.
Well, that's fantastic. By the way, you know, it's funny you mentioned the Superman mythos. Is nothing sacred? Is it true what I heard, that he has given up his American citizenship?
Well, so what's today? What, Thursday? Yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
Don's in trouble. Must be Tuesday.
Yes. Yeah, I think the quick answer to that is yes, for this week.
For this
week.
We'll
see if it lasts through next week.
Yeah, I mean, he's been dead before. How seriously can you really take this?
Really. I mean, unfortunately,
they plot with gimmicks so much that they have trouble plotting without gimmicks. But anyway, we have 15 minutes left of the show, and I really want to get some more pitching in. But
okay.
It's been a great call, and glad you got through.
Keep up the good work. And listen, Mark, keep on loving them cereals.
No. I don't think you have anything to worry about.
Man, he eats cereals for breakfast.
One of these days, just last thing, one of these days, Mark, if we ever, by the way, what is your last name, please?
Svensson.
Svensson?
Swedish.
Swedish, yeah, sure. Swedish meatballs. Anyway, listen, we have to talk about the best cliffhanger chapters. Chapter 5, Captain Marvel.
Oh, very good, yeah, good one. I was going to go with Spy Smasher.
Oh, I love Spy Smasher. But Captain Marvel, when the Scorpion has him in the Harrison Mine, rolling 10 billion tons of rock on his head. And, you know, everybody says that's the best cliffhanger. You know, by about the middle 40s, I was watching recently Zombies of the Stratosphere, in which Leonard Nimoy makes that famous cameo scene in Chapter 11.
That's what Max and our Paul Martin were talking about this past Saturday morning.
Oh, that's too funny. Full circle.
But anyway, I'm gonna let you go.
All right,
thanks for the call. And you're listening.
I just want to.
Hold on, you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org, and I'm Ken Gale sitting in for Jim Freund, who does a science fiction show interviewing authors and having them read from their works every week at this time. And I am with Mark Svensson and Gina Donahue. And we've been talking about Gene Colan, and then just now we've been talking about a whole bunch of stuff that's not Gene Colan.
Yeah, exactly. But can I bring it back, Gene Colan, quickly?
Yeah, but first, let me repeat, 212-209-2950.
please.
The caller
play.
Gave you some great reasons to support shows like this. You know, I can't imagine that people want the same old show over and over again, which is what you get in other stations and which is what you might get during every fund drive if you don't support the unique shows. It's very important that those of you who have a niche interest in a certain show support that show to make sure that it doesn't get preempted during these drives. It might be irritating to have Jim ask for money in the middle of that, but think of what else the rest of the show is like. And so, you know, in the name of Jim Freund, who is at ReaderCon right now, in the name of Gene Colan, who can't be with us at all, please call 212-209-2950. It's 212-209-2950. And right now, the number of calls is zero.
Maybe if I say it. The number is 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Call it. Or be very disappointed.
Or 212-209-2950. Listen to Gina. See, that's my Gina pimping. I gotta.
Well, I would not be opposed if the entire listenership of BAI listened to me. I have the
we
ego
are
to support
to you,
it.
Gina.
I have the ego to support it. You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that she is, after all, half of the house band of WBAI.
I am. One half. Me and Mercy Van Vlack.
They
were the heart house band at the Hudson River Revival a few weeks ago.
No, seriously, we had a guitar and a copy of Rise Up Singing. And the
musician guest who was supposed to be there didn't show up, and so they filled in the gap. And they
both
can sing, so it worked quite well.
Excellent.
10 minutes of silly.
No, 5 minutes of silly and 5 minutes of real singing.
Ah, yes, yes, yes.
212-209-2950. They didn't listen to you, Gina. Not a single person called while you told them to. Maybe we should play that song you picked out. I only brought a handful of music with me, and Gina picked something out.
I picked it out of, you know, the list that's on Ken's thing there. Which...
Yeah.
Can you slam dance to it?
Maybe.
Maybe. Well, let's
you
find out.
You can definitely dance to it.
And so while it's playing, call 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. And everybody who knows the song is going to know what song it is after like two or three notes.
Yeah, it'll be great.
It's one of the most recognizable songs around if you know
so
it.
Great.
And other people are going, what? Kind of song is, where did you find that? 212-209-2950. Thank you for that call. 212-209-2950. We've got to get over, at least go over, well, anyway, how did we get from $50 to $35? Maybe they should be added together. Anyway, $25 for a regular membership, or there's a lot of different movies and different premiums that have been offered. You can ask what they are, everything from...
Rolling paper.
Rolling papers to movies about 9/11 conspiracies, you know, or banking conspiracies. There's all kinds of neat stuff. So anyway, here's some
no
music.
Batteries.
And call 212-209-2950.
Godzilla. This is BAI. You are listening to Hour of the Wolf, hosted by Ken Gale. The guests tonight are me, Gina Donahue, and Mark Svensson, who is in Boston. The number to pledge, because we are on a pledge drive, is 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. You really want to pledge, because you really want us on the air.
And we really want Gina on the air.
212-209-2950. Right now, nobody's calling. I think everybody's like, what are they going to say or do or play?
Well, you see, everybody's still waiting for the flight ring explanation.
And by the way, that was Blue Oyster Cult doing their song Godzilla.
Oh, was that what it was about?
I thought it was about Mothra.
Or for their album,
you know.
Spectres.
212-209-2950.
See, I like both. Blue Cult, and by the way, of all the songs I picked out, that's what Gina picked out. And of course, I like, you know, Styx and Blue Oyster Cult and all kinds of weird stuff. And I got into so much trouble in high school for liking disparate types of music.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Liking Crosby, Stills, and Nash and Led Zeppelin. Sure. Absolutely forbidden.
Oh, yeah, because you'd totally be shunned from either side of the divide there.
Yeah, and so liking both was like, oh, no. You
music
know.
Traitor.
And it wasn't like both people who liked both bands were like, oh, you like the same band I like. And so, no, you don't like the, you know.
You don't like this. That still goes on. Yeah. That still goes on. There's so much music snobbery. It's so funny.
Yep. Well, back then, if you were a comic fan, you had to get used to being shunned. So.
I do remember those days as well.
That's the way it was. And now it seems that the comic fan has gone on and influenced Hollywood, and it's really something else. By the way, speaking again of Tom Fagan, when the Spider-Man movie came out, there was a feeling that, wow, we're accepted.
Really?
Tom was around for the first Spider-Man movie. It was kind of interesting. That there was enough of it, and the ball was really rolling, that if you're a comic book fan, you're accepted.
Yeah,
I gotta just quickly insert that even going in high school in the 90s, which is when I was in high school. Sorry, guys.
I know, it may seem like yesterday to other people on the
when I started reading comics in high school. Because I was reading other comics before then, but the ones that I'd actually bring into class and read behind the textbook were Garth Ennis's Preacher.
Okay.
eventually, it wasn't till like junior, senior year, Warren Ellis's Transmetropolitan.
Sure.
I went to Catholic school.
Oh, great.
And I learned Catholic about Transmetropolitan school. From Sidney Smith right here at BAI.
I had my only ever letter column letter published in an issue of Transmetropolitan.
Oh.
Wow.
And it was right before the start of Sequential Tart, which is an online, basically it's a fanzine, but it was basically supposed to be the women's equivalent to Wizard magazine.
Right. Trina did that, right? I mean,
no.
No?
I mean, she may have contributed to it, but she didn't start it.
Yeah, she contributed it to it. The starters were
Jessica Abel,
Steffi.
Because I filmed some panels, I think, of Sequential Tart in San Diego over the years, and I just remember Trina being on.
Oh, yeah. Trina would be at a panel.
Oh, yeah.
In San Diego about it, yeah.
Yeah, but that letter column
angering all the female superhero fans in the audience.
That letter column, there were at least three people who mentioned the Garth Ennis Estrogen Brigade.
Oh, right.
Which is where Sequential Tart came from. So that's uh-huh. my little contribution of history. Sorry. Thank you.
And it's almost 3 in the morning, and
we're going to be kicked off. I'll have to go back to my normal life again.
Indeed, yes. And,
not me. I took tomorrow off.
Oh, yeah. You don't get tomorrow off when you got kids.
Yeah, right. That's true. Mark has three absolutely wonderful kids.
I am biased.
Yes. Well, I guess I'm biased too because I think they're wonderful. But does that if they are wonderful, that's not bias. That's just sort of stating a fact, right? So anyway, I think I should play a little bit of music that's nice and short, and it's the 3D Invisibles. Who watches the Watchmen, and then we'll get out of here and we can make the transition. But you can still call 212-209-2950.
212-209-2950.
And Mark will go to the back and answer the phone calls. Oh, wait, no, he'll be the one of us who doesn't go to the back and answer the phone calls.
Great. So, I can't.
So if you call the next few minutes, you might get one of us. But you have to pledge. It's not just a call to see if Gina will ignore her fiancé or some dumb thing.
Corius, don't call.
So 212-209-2950. It's 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950.
212-209-2950.
want suppression of the truth put on hold. The bold lose control, so they force obedience. Have you pledge allegiance to a piece of cloth? That's all the way I see it. Well, I'm going off berserk, cause the system work to jerk. My people, the people, all around the peace work. Tell me I'm wrong, though, that's my writing is writing the Constitution. Yo, that's an illusion, huh? Suckers trying to change and rearrange. They say that I'm free, but they sure have a strange way of showing it. But I'm blowing the cover, the red, white, the blue, but the black for the brother. And I'm the lover of this flag like many others take the same turn like me. They yearn for the flag too.
Single list alive right here. This is Begathon. We're gonna do this until 5 o'clock. Burn, baby, burn, clappers. Too black, too strong. The record that was censored right here. 99 Single, WBA, yeah. Yo, you know what to do. 212-209-2950, Burn Baby Burn Clappers on a Thursday, 3 until 5 o'clock. English Al Jazeera kicks in at 5 o'clock. and we take it away like this, y'all. Felipe Luciano on the radio at 6 o'clock with Wake Up Call. Esther, 6 o'clock, a brand new Wake Up Call right here. And that's the best premium we could offer. Yo, don't change the feeling from the top, Harlem pull up. Listen, you gotta call 212-209-2950. You did right by me last time. You did right by the masses last time. You did right by the proletariat this time. We got a $50 matchathon. What that means, Lister, if you only have $15 and you're short $10, you wanna give $25, we pull it out of the $50 bag. It's called a matching fund. Let's do it. 212-209-2950. The premium is this show. Don't let Tara Wilson give more to this Burn Baby Burn show than you. Did I hear $100? Did I hear $100? Yes, I heard $100. 212-209-2950. Let's get over the zero mark.